Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the revamp of Mike and Beans. But this time, we're going to focus on college basketball only. So here's a new solely college basketball podcast. I'm Bennett Solomon. I'm here with my good friend, Michael DeRosa. Both of us graduates from college in May. Michael graduated from Butler University, and I'm a graduate of the University of Florida. So not going to bore you with all that stuff. But college basketball got underway last night, and I think the biggest storyline to talk about here, SEC loses four games on opening night. Number 13, Texas A&M loses to UCF 64-61 on the road. Number 19, Texas loses to Ohio State 80-72 at home. South Carolina loses to North Florida 74-71 at home. And Missouri loses to Memphis 83-75. So out of those four games, Mike, biggest takeaways for you?
Yeah, I thought Trey Johnson at Texas looked very good in that game, freshman. And truth be told, I wasn't as high on him as most people were. I think he's kind of a chucker. But I mean, 29 points, that kind of speaks quite a bit. But you're definitely going to touch on him, so I'm just going to tee you up for it. South Carolina is coming off like an excellent season. And Colin Murray Boyle's like just, I mean, he was a star from the moment he showed up on campus. And he wasn't a highly touted recruit in the slightest. And it's like, all right, you got to build off that season. Sucks that you lose Michi Johnson. Sucks that you lose quite a bit. But you kind of got to build off that season into something to show, like, that wasn't just a fluke. You know, there's success in the path to the future, even if we lose a couple good guys. And then you drop a dud against North Florida, all things considered a mediocre A-Sun team. Like, they're not a team expected to win the A-Sun. They're expected to be in sort of that conversation, but, like, they're nothing special. And you got beat. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, no, I thought it was probably the most disappointing loss of the four games. I think, you know, Texas A&M at UCF is probably, you know, up there. I know Ohio State's got a pretty good team this year. Obviously, you know, new head coach for the full season at Ohio State. But, you know, two very, very decent programs. You know, the reason I say South Carolina is probably the most disappointing loss is because you're coming off a 26-8 season. Yeah. Like, and you get a freebie pretty much to start with North Florida. North Florida hasn't finished over 500 since the 2019-20 season. They almost did last year, went 16-16. But you know, if you're Lama, I understand, you know, losing your two leading scorers or Michi Johnson, BJ Mack. But again, freebie for North Florida, definitely not the outcome you want for Lamont Paris to start the season. And this SEC is, I'd say it's close to being probably the best conference in the country in college basketball. And, you know, to start out with a loss in North Florida, I mean, you kind of look at what's coming on that schedule. You know, it's very frightening. I would say it's frightening if you're a South Carolina fan.
Yeah, and North Florida lost their best player, Ches Lanier. He transferred out to Tennessee. So, like, this was, all things considered, not a North Florida team that was really expected to be any good. And you just dropped a dud in your opening game. Yeah, we had North Florida for the magazine. We had them 12th out of 13 teams in the A-Sun. So you didn't, it's like sometimes when you lose a game to a mid-major, it's like, okay, that team ends up being good. And it's just like, okay, you know, stuff happens. Like, I could go examples, but my mind blanked. But you lost to a bad team. That was just a bad performance against a bad team. I think that's probably, that might be the most embarrassing performance of day one, sans Baylor, who we're probably going to talk about later.
Yeah. I mean, one of the main talking points last year going into the NCAA tournament was that the SEC got eight teams into the tournament. And, you know, obviously, were they talented enough? Without a doubt, I think so. But then only three of those eight teams moved on, you know, from the first round. They did not have a good showing, you know, as a conference in that opening round. Obviously, Alabama went to the Final Four. Tennessee went to the Elite Eight, but they were kind of expected to make runs.
Yeah.
Texas A&M won their opening round game, and you know they gave Houston a run for it. But all the other teams, Mississippi State, Florida, Auburn got upset by Yale. You know, the conference was a main talking point going into that tournament, and it was a really, really poor showing. And you know, for the SEC, who opened day one with four losses, and I mean, I probably most of them were, the SEC teams were favored, probably besides Missouri against Memphis. Texas was at home. I'm guessing they were favored over Ohio
That game
State.
was played in Vegas, but
Oh,
I
was it
believe
played?
Texas was a 2.5 point favorite.
Okay. Well, Texas was a 2.5 point favorite. I mean, obviously South Carolina was probably double digits over North Florida, that favorite. And then obviously, Texas A&M loses to UCF on the road. Just not the start for the SEC you want. I think before the Baylor loss last night, I think they were the SEC had four teams out of the Power Five conferences. Like they were the only teams to lose. So not the start you want.
Yeah, I watch a lot of Big East ball. Big East teams didn't look great, but yeah, SEC teams just not putting up results. Namely, at least the Big East team didn't lose. DePaul had to hit basically a buzzer beater to send the game to overtime. Then two clutch free throws with 2 seconds left to beat Southern Indiana. All things said, are not a great team. A couple other Big East teams struggled, but yeah, they at least won. SEC teams, all things considered, I don't think the loss at UCF is going to be a killer late season. Granted, UCF is pretty injured. Duer Johnson didn't play. Mikey Williams didn't play. Do you guys are expected to at least play roles on this UCF team? They were out, but it's kind of hard to go on the road and win your first game. So, like, stuff happens there. Missouri, I'm not going to lie. I kind of thought Missouri played like shit.
Well, it's Missouri, Missouri's program is
It is, but also Memphis is in. I mean, a player transferred yesterday. Memphis fired all their assistant coaches a month ago, and Missouri was up on them quite a bit. And it's like, all right, Memphis is going to bottom out. And then they just kind of choked late. Just seemed like bad late game execution, truth be told. Like, I don't really know how else to put it. And
One
then.
thing, one thing I want to say about Texas A&M is that, last year they weren't great in their non-conference schedule. They had to fight in the SEC and kind of get into the tournament through SEC conference play. And, if you kind of look at the scope of a season, if you do well, it's kind of what South Carolina did last year. It started 7-0, and they were able to kind of use that momentum, finish 26-8, and, pretty easy bid into the tournament. Now Texas A&M had to fight. I don't know if they really want to go that route again, just because of how difficult the SEC is.
No, and you can afford a road loss to a team that's going to be at least competent. That roster has talent. That there is a very easy chance UCF could bottom out given the personalities, but that is another conversation for another day. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's like too much of a killer loss. I also didn't enter the season with Texas A&M as a top 25 team. I just kind of think they hit their ceiling, and I don't know if they made any moves that made them substantially better than last season when we were all expecting them to take this jump. But then you lose, and you didn't, and then you lose Tyrese Radford, who, I mean, excellent slasher. That is just like, all right, you bring back Wade Taylor. He is awesome, but like the rest of that roster, I don't know, doesn't really do it for me. That they'll be fine. They're a tournament team still, but I don't know. I didn't have as high expectations as A&M as other people seem to.
Well, like we want to, highlight, it is just it is day one. It was game one. A lot of time in this college basketball season. But takes us to the game of the night last night. 11:30 start time. Don't know if you stayed up or not,
I
but
did.
Gonzaga, number six Gonzaga versus number eight Baylor. Everyone expected it to be a close game. Two, just phenomenal programs. Very just persistent programs, very consistent programs. And Gonzaga puts 101 points on Baylor and beats him by 38. Gonzaga crushes Baylor 101 to 63. Hope my math is right. Not a math major for a.
You got it right. You got it right.
All right, cool.
Keep reaching
Cool.
up, buddy.
Bet. Yeah. But Gonzaga just demolishes Baylor 101 to 63 in Spokane. So look, basically a home game for Gonzaga. But you expect kind of a little more out of Baylor on day one. But not often do you see a Scott Drew team give up 100 points, 100 plus points. And then opening night, Gonzaga does it. Baylor gave up, just put this into perspective, Baylor gave up 100 plus points in one game last season. That was a triple overtime game to TCU. They only gave up 90 plus points twice last year. And then on opening night, they gave up 100 plus points. Mike, do you think Baylor's performance is concerning?
Yeah, defensively, I think it definitely raises an eyebrow. That zone they were trying to run was just nothing. Nobody knew where to stand. Nobody knew. Like, there were certain times it's like Omer over rotates here, gives up an easy corner three. Then another time, like the next possession down, pretty much, it's like, okay, you're running this like 1-3-1, and then Hickman gets the ball in the wing, and nobody guards him. So he just sits there for a minute waiting to make a pass. No one steps up to him. He's like, okay, whatever. I guess I'll shoot this. And of course, it went in. So I don't know. I thought it was concerning from that perspective. Just their defense wasn't great, but like it's not a game I'm gonna completely sell out overreaction to because Vijay Ejkomaa, I've watched enough of his games, high school when he played with the Bahamian national team over the summer. They're like, I know he's a stud. He's better than 2 of 11. Bad games happen. We've seen enough out of Jeremy Roach. Those things happen. I feel like Norchad's gonna be better than 5 of 12 once you get kind of going. But yeah, I don't think Baylor was connected. And Baylor had some, I mean, 3 of 21 from three. That's tough. I don't expect Baylor to shoot that every night. Like, that's just tough. I think the one bright spot for Baylor is freshman Rob Wright off the bench looked really good. But yeah, the defense is definitely a concern. They just have not figured it out on that end.
Yeah, I mean, and like we've said, it's day one, game one. But for Baylor, I think this kind of is an eye-opening loss, just because you get and there's time to do this, but you got to get this team to mesh, just because three of the five players in the starting lineup are new guys, and with Roach coming over from Duke. Obviously, Edgecombe is the five-star stud that's most likely a one and done and a lottery pick. And then Norchad comes over from Miami. Both Roach and Norchad have, Final Four experience. Those two guys should bring those leadership abilities and the experience over for that starting lineup. And then, you lose by 38 on opening night. Concerning? Yes. But it's slightly, I mean, you look at this team on paper, all, just tons of talent, will definitely be a top team in the Big 12. But this not the way they decided to start their schedule. I mean, shout out to Scott Drew. You have Gonzaga last night, and then on Saturday they play Arkansas. And that's going to be a really, really big test, a really big bounce back question. Hey, how will this team respond early in the season to, oh, who's there now? John Calipari at Arkansas. So obviously a lot to see, but it'll definitely be interesting, kind of look at how they bounce back. Edgecombe, 2 of 11, like you said, only 4 points. Probably gonna, I think only what one of their starters were in double digits last night.
Yeah.
So, obviously a lot to look, a lot to look out for Baylor. Not the start you want, but day one. Now, on the other hand, Gonzaga looked awesome. Looked awesome. Dive into that, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, Gonzaga won this game at every single level. Ryan Nembhard was just, I mean, I think probably my biggest takeaway from day one is it was very clear the teams that didn't have a real point guard versus did. The teams that really did really showed up, sans Baylor, because I think Roach, I mean, Duke kind of wanted to run him at the two, but like broad strokes. Teams that generally have really good point guards showed up on day one. Those teams were ready. They're getting guys the ball in their spots. They didn't have like those kind of growing pains that teams that are still waiting for the answer at point guard did. Nembhard was excellent. 11 assists, 2 turnovers. I mean, that's an experienced floor general. That's a guy who knows exactly where he needs his guys to be to attack. And then the guards at Gonzaga really had some spark to them last night that they kind of didn't have last year. Ke'Lief Battle, just getting in the lane, causing problems, hitting shots from the outside, just a complete performance from Gonzaga. And then your big man rotation of EK, Greg, Hoff, those three all really showed up. And then you got good 3-point shooting off the bench from Ajayi and Dusty Stromer. Just at all three levels, Gonzaga won this game, and they were a better defensive team. They were the better team on the glass. They were more aggressive, and they were just better with the ball in their hands. They played as a team together versus Baylor played a ton of iso ball that it was just kind of a well-oiled machine. Like you can see it, 25 assists for Gonzaga to 11 turnovers versus Baylor, 11 assists, 12 turnovers. It's like, yeah, you're not going to win many games like that. And Gonzaga just, they opened up a can of whoop ass. They looked excellent.
No, I think coming into the season, you look at this Gonzaga team and you're like, okay, this is a team that can get Mark Few his first national championship. Six of its seven leading scorers from last year return, and it showed last night. Five players in double digits. Like you said, they shared the ball exceptionally well, 25 assists, and shot 57%, from the field, 40% from three. That's going to win you ball games. That is going to win you ball games. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure. Are they playing this West Coast Conference schedule for one more year before they head over to the Pac-12?
I don't know if it's one or two. I haven't looked into it enough, but something like that.
Well, I mean, then I'm thinking, this year, if they're playing that West Coast Conference schedule, is this going to be the most dominant Gonzaga team we have ever seen kind of run through that conference. I mean, obviously, St. Mary's is, usually finished second, and that's the team that gives them the most problems usually during the year. But after this performance against Baylor, top 10 team, you have to think that, okay, Barkview has a real good chance to break through and get that national championship.
Yeah, they're going to be a national title contender, no doubt. And the WCC this year is not bad. You mentioned St. Mary's; they're always going to be all right. Santa Clara, I watched their game yesterday. They looked really good. Adama Ofoball is going to be an NBA player. He's just good enough to do that. They got some good production from this Cameron Tongue guy. Just excellent on the glass, did kind of everything. And then they bring over bounce back transfer Carlos Stewart, who played last year at LSU. Just he knows the system. It's a well-coached team with Herb Sendick. I think the Santa Clara team's going to be good too. And then San Francisco's also got a fairly talented roster. That like those four, Gonzaga's competing for national titles, where those other teams are competing for tournament bids. So obviously you're on a completely different scale. But like WCC's not terrible this year,
All right.
and
Well,
Gonzaga probably runs through it.
yeah. Well, I mean, if you say how if you say, how good the WCC is, and then we see Gonzaga run through it, I think that will say something. But it's always a question going into the tournament. Oh, Gonzaga's strength of schedule wasn't great. Blah blah blah. And then Gonzaga did go to the Sweet 16 last year.
And yeah, they make the Sweet 16 every single year.
Yeah, just the consistency of Mark Few will show. Let's see if he can finally get that national championship that has, been upon him so much. He's gotten to a couple national titles, just has never been able to go through. But day one, sorry, technically day two of college basketball, a lot of games to be played. Couple of, obviously, a lot of top 25 teams were in action last night. North Carolina was one of them, and I personally was not impressed with North Carolina. 14-point win over Elon. I feel like that should have been a more dominant win. Elon has never made the NCAA tournament. I think North Carolina shot 40% from the field. Their starters scored 74 of the team's 90 points, so only 16 points off the bench. You just look at the box score, and the first thing that I noticed from that game was North Carolina won the rebounding, but only by 3 rebounds. They only rebounded Elon 43 to 40. And although, I'll give it to North Carolina, they got 18 offensive rebounds, so definitely got to work there. But North Carolina lost Armando Bacot and Harrison Ingram, probably are I think their two best rebounders, without a doubt. And they barely out-rebound an Elon program that has never made it to the NCAA tournament. I think that's a little, that's concerning. That's me though, Mike.
Yeah, it's game one, but definitely shows concerns on the glass. I think that is really the one takeaway is Jalen Withers, Jalen Washington. Now that those guys are like excellent bigs, and it was very clear UNC was desperate for a big almost all summer, and they bring in Vernon Lubin from Vanderbilt, and like okay, but his main problem at Vanderbilt, probably the reason he wanted to leave, was because Vanderbilt had to play him at the five out of necessity, and he's like what 6'5", 6'6", listed. Okay, or ESPN can just decide to load on me. Listed six, he is not 6'8". Listed 6'8", though. That's not like it's not a guy you really want running the five for your team. So I don't know. I think the interior is definitely a concern with UNC, but guards look good. I mean, you shot 40.6% from three. You shot better from three than the field. Kind of crazy, but that did happen. You got a good performance out of RJ Davis because he's really good at basketball. Davis and Cadeau really shared the ball really well. Cadeau had 17 points, 7 field goals, 8 assists. Like, 7 field goal attempts, 8 assists. Looked really solid, but yeah, just on the glass, you didn't look great, and that's probably something that's going to be a problem for them all season. They're just going to have to find a way to address that. And if Elon, a team that all things considered is never ever known for their toughness or athleticism, is kind of starting to expose that, I just kind of think it's going to be a problem year long. But the guards will win them some games.
Well, that's the thing. I think it this North Carolina team is going to come down to how far can those guards take you. I'm reading the Athletic preview on some of these teams. Hubert Davis was to ha a thought of Hubert Davis was to play five guards. Like, all right, you can only obviously you can shoot lights out. That'll take you a long way because points, points, points. But what happens when you aren't making shots and then you don't have that defensive, I mean, or that rebounding capability in the paint to grab those offensive boards. I think it's if they don't find someone to at least make up for, just Bacot's rebounding ability, and Inger's rebounding ability, I only think the guards can take you so far. Because, you have looked at UConn's, Dan Hurley's squad the last 2 years, just a complete team. I mean, obviously, it's nice having Donovan Klingon in the paint. He can grab all the boards he wants. But, he's, Klingon was surrounded by shooters, just athletic guards, surrounded by everyone. And when you don't, I mean, how important are rebounds in just the game of basketball? And when you're losing that rebound game, or when you're barely beat Elon in the rebounding game, I think it's concerning. Heck, it's day one. We'll see what happens.
On the defensively too, it's like your bigs are your last line of defense. If your guards get blown by, your bigs are just kind of there to like make shot a little tougher. And if you don't have good interior play, like Gonzaga had 7 blocks yesterday, 2 of them were from Elliot Cadeau. I don't know. That's definitely another concern for me. And Elon shot 42% from the field. Definitely, I mean, Elon's better 3-point shooting team than 2-point shooting team. I mean, just season long they will be, but. Yeah, I don't know if they were too afraid to drive on North Carolina, and I think that's kind of something. It's like you just kind of got to send a message, and at least coming down the line, like what you're supposed to be a team competing with Duke, and Duke's got some really good bigs, so good luck.
Yeah. No, I mean, one quick thing I just want to, touch on. Purdue obviously handled Texas Corpus Christi last night, but Texas Corpus Christi was in the game in the second half. I was a little concerned about that, but Purdue pulled away late. I think, Purdue had 16 turnovers, thought, they clean up that game or they clean up that part. I think they'll be fine. Obviously, can't really replace Zach Edey. However, Matt Painter will find just tall people to put in that paint. And I think Purdue will be fine. Just something I thought to bring up.
Braden Smith is awesome. He's so good. It's just kind of who can be the next guys to rise up to the occasion for Purdue? Who can help Braden Smith? Like Braden Smith had 15 assists last night. He had 12, 15, and 8. He is incredible. He is awesome. He's the team's we know what we're getting out of him. It's just can Trey Kaufman-Rand be consistent? Can Fletcher Loyer be consistent, who has really struggled with consistency in his college career? And also I don't love their too big lineup. I don't love going Trey Kaufman-Wren and Daniel Jacobson together. I'm assuming it's what they're going to do, and Jacobson is kind of at this point just tall. Like that was kind of the main Edie complaint. It's like, no, Edie's skilled. Jacobson at this point just kind of just tall. Obviously he's really young in his career, so he's going to get better and he's going to develop. And we've seen what Purdue has done with these huge bigs that you just know eventually it's going to work. But yeah. That's just kind of a note. I just kind of think they're going to be better if they're able to run 4 guards or 3 guards and a forward next to Trey Kaufman-Wren, who I think can play both the five and then can help him space the floor, which is kind of something like you don't want to try to replace Edie with another post player. You want to replace him in the aggregate, shut up Moneyball. And I just think playing Trey Kaufman-Wren at the five is kind of the better way to do that.
Well, this is certainly the time. This is certainly the time where, you kind of experiment with
Yeah.
certain lineups. Matt Painter is one of the best in the business, one of the best coaches in college basketball. He'll find that solution. I think what really matters is if you get that solid lineup by the time conference play starts, I think you're good and ride that as long as you can. Figure out what works, have some success in conference play, and then March Madness will have arrived. All right, but good first episode, Mike. Happy we were able to start this back up. We're going to try and be on 2 times a week. Trying to be back on Friday to preview the weekend and talk about any upsets that happen for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Thanks for following along and have a good week. Thanks, Mike.
Stay classy.